Hi, I'm Becca. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Becca.
I just wanted to thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight and share a little bit of my story, my experience, strength, and hope with you guys. It's kind of intimidating being in here, I'm not going to lie. I kind of liked the music in the background better, but Ben said I couldn't listen to it, so here we go. So I guess I'll start with the beginning, although even for me, it gets kind of hazy. Going into my fifth year of sobriety, I haven't really been able to unravel a lot of the past. I don't know if that's like a gift that God gave me in my sobriety because it wasn't time for me to visit that part of my life yet, or if my mind's just clear enough to start tying things together. But certainly this past year has been really profound in my sobriety. And I've been able to really reflect back into the past without having some of that morbid reflection that we talk about and let it spin and get me into those dark places that we try to avoid. So, you know, I grew up in an alcoholic home. My stepdad was what we like to call a functional alcoholic. And at the time, I didn't really think there was anything abnormal about it. He would drink driving places. He would drink when he woke up. He would drink when he got home. And it didn't really seem to alter him in any way. So it was just something I thought dads did. And my mom would drink on occasion. And I was just kind of a loner kid, you know. It wasn't really the happiest childhood. In fact, I remember growing up thinking, I just got to make it until I get to 18 and then I can get out of here. And I remember going to my friend's house and thinking, I wonder what it feels like to have that, oh, I'm home, you know, like, oh, it's so nice to be home because I never felt that way. When my friends, like, we'd get to their house and they wanted to go play, I was like, well, can't we just, like, chill with your parents for a while? And they'd be like, what? But it was, like, so cool for me to see what I considered normal families and normal parents interacting with their children and their family, and I just wanted to absorb all of that up and stay as long as I could until it was time to go home. And, you know, I was really active in the church growing up. I went on my own accord. I can see now that that was also a good escape for me and a lot of where I got that family feeling. And I clung on to that. You know, that was like my strength growing up until I got to about high school. I never really felt a part of any group I was in. I just felt like, you know, in the book it talks about, especially when you're working on your third step, about being an actor on the stage, you know, playing that part. And that's what I did, you know. That's who I was all my life. And that's all I knew how to do was just put on that mask and walk out the door and never let anybody in, never let anybody see what was really going on inside of me. And what was really going on inside of me as I grew up and got older was just this constant torment. And that was before I was even using. That inability to even look in the mirror started, you know, far beyond drugs and alcohol. And that was the cool thing about when I got here and I learned that alcohol wasn't the problem, it was my solution. It was a symptom to the problem. And that makes a lot of sense to me today, thinking back on those lonely times when I just felt so hollow and empty. And then when I finally let go of all the notions I had from my stepdad drinking and decided to take that first drink and that first hit, and it was like, ugh, instant relief. And that hollowness filled up, and I was okay. And all those insecurities, walking in the door to meet new people, I didn't have that problem. But I knew, like, day one that I was different from my fellows in the party world when I drank and when I smoked pot, which is what I started on, because I wasn't stopping. And they were like, whoa, you need to calm down. And I was just starting that, and I was like, no, we're good. And it just carried on that way And of course, my tolerance grew, and so did my using. And as I got older, you know, I kind of turned into that cycle addict where things would get really bad, really bad. And then I would, okay, I need to take a break and clean up this wreckage and put on this even stronger mask and be an even better actress so people don't penetrate this wall I've built up because it's getting pretty thin. And it was starting to get pretty bad at one point where my friends were getting really concerned. And there's a couple times through those cycles that I can... Whoa. You all right? Good. where I can pinpoint friends that had been there for me for years and weren't addicts or alcoholics who stopped talking to me because they were afraid of what I'd become. And I thought, I remember in that time thinking, like, what is wrong with them? And feeling so persecuted when I felt so good about something. Like, I truly felt so good about who I was when I was using. And I didn't understand why they didn't want to have anything to do with me. And that was when I got pregnant with my first child. And I thought, here we are. Here's the solution. This will fill me up. I'm good. And I didn't use... I even quit smoking when I was pregnant with my son. And I had a firm resolve. I meant it, too. I was going to stay sober. I was going to get my life together. And seemingly, things started to come together while I was pregnant. I got my own apartment, got a couple jobs, and I was gonna make it work. I was 20 when I got pregnant, and 2 months after he was born, I turned 21. And of course, I had to go out and party, for my 21st birthday, and that was the first time I had gone out since I had my son. And, you know, just like the book says, but again, I didn't identify as anybody with any sort of alcoholic problem at the time. So I couldn't have possibly known what I was in for. But when I went out for that 21st birthday, that was the beginning of one of my many ends. And it turned into every weekend. And then it turned into Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Then it turned into, you know, just this ongoing thing. And I would justify the hell out of it because I couldn't bear the thought of acknowledging what I was doing with as much as I loved this little boy. Like, I loved that little boy more than anything I had ever experienced in my life. And I couldn't understand why I couldn't stop. So finally, it all came to a head, and I ended up going to a psych unit. Because in my head, I always thought, if I can psychologically have something wrong with me, that's justifiable, and they won't take my kid away. But if it's anything to do with drugs or alcohol, they will take my kids away, and I can't have that. That cannot happen. And so I went and stayed in a psych unit. And that was the first time in my life that I had ever gotten any kind of attention for something wrong with me, and I didn't like it. I didn't like people knowing that I had a dark secret and that all of a sudden it was exposed. And so I did what I normally do that I hate, and that's manipulate and lie and get my way, and I got out of there, you know, within a week, and then I was back to taking care of my son with this firm resolve, everything's going to be okay, and it just wasn't. And things got so much worse after that. I got in some pretty dark places in that time period. Places that I never imagined I would find myself. And there I was, you know. And I got to the point where I couldn't leave the house. You know, I was paranoid. And it was getting really bad. And then I got pregnant again. And I thought, okay, here we are again. This time will be different, and I am going to, again, firmly resolve to stay sober. And I quit smoking again, and I was terrified to death to be a single mom now with two kids. But I was going to defy society and everything that I had ever known prior and beat the odds. And that's not what happened. You know, I had my daughter, and same story, different day. Things went well for a while. But this time it was that memory of what had happened with my son, and it was a little bit darker trying to pull myself up again. And I ended up getting a roommate, and I remember I picked a roommate that in my mind did things that were not as good as a parent as me, or made bad choices with her money, or I thought she partied too much and left her son at home too much. So it maybe wasn't a conscious thing, but I picked her to be my roommate. Real wise choice on my end. And I just thought so little of this person, but that's how much I needed my ego to shine a little bit. And I remember my drinking got so bad. It was I'd wake up in the morning and go outside in the garage and have a beer and a cigarette. Then I'd get another beer and I'd actually take it in the shower with me. And I thought it was so cool. Like, I am drinking a beer in the shower. This is badass. And then I'd get ready, and that my reward was to go out and smoke another cigarette and drink a beer. And then I'd take the rest of that pack and put it in my trunk and head off to work. And I remember her telling me once, like, I think you might have a problem. I think you might be an alcoholic. And I flipped out on her, like, who are you to tell me I have a problem? Like, look at your life. And I just refused to look at it. That same story over and over played out until I finally got sober for the first time. Whether it was a boyfriend, a best friend, a family member, it didn't matter. I denied it, and I could give you a million reasons as to why I was acting the way I wasn't that did not lead back to my alcoholism. And I got sober for the first time in December of 2007, but I wasn't ready, I wasn't willing, and I did not surrender. I still wanted it my way. I mean, I was ready to make my amends. Like, the day after I detoxed, I was ready. I was like, okay, I feel good. Let's go get this taken care of. Let's go talk to my boss. Let's go talk to my family. And my sponsor was like, whoa, no, we don't do that. And I didn't understand why. And I kept that attitude of not understanding why I couldn't have it my way, and just holding grudges, which we know to be resentments. And I met a guy, and on my 89th day, I relapsed on alcohol because I had somehow convinced myself that alcohol wasn't my problem. And having never even tried hard drugs before, I quickly found myself doing everything I never said I would do again. And this time it was a lot darker because, you know, not only did I lose my soul, but I gave up things I said I would never do. I refused to go to treatment like three prior times up to that point. And when it all came crashing down, I willingly handed my children over to their dads because they weren't safe with me anymore, because I feared for their safety. And how did I, the person who loved her children and wanted to give them a life better than I had had for myself, how did I continue this cycle? That incomprehensible demoralization, that was certainly ringing true for me, having had some of this in my head, and I knew where to come. There was a day or two where I just, after giving my kids back, I just stayed in that morbid reflection. But then I got up and I went to a meeting, and that was September 16th of 2008, and I've been here ever since. And the greatest thing about this experience this time has been, this time I was desperate and willing, and I could recognize that my thinking brought me to that point, and that it was probably time to start listening to the suggestions of a few people who had a few more days than me that had the lives that I wanted. And I got a sponsor. And I got a woman sponsor, even though I wanted a man sponsor, because I don't like chicks. I want to hang out with dudes, you know. Same story, different day with girls who come into the rooms. But when you're new and you're a woman in the rooms, that's who you are. And it's terrifying to go talk to a chick and then to call her every single day. I don't think I've ever called a chick every single day any other time in my life. But I was willing and I did it. And because of those simple suggestions in the beginning, I had some of those simple miracles that in the rooms we celebrate and outside the rooms, they kind of shake their heads and wonder, like, why we're celebrating these things that adults just do. Like getting my car registered, getting the warrants taken care of, getting my license back. That all happened in like three months into my sobriety. Another cool thing that first year was I was able to get a service position, GSRing a meeting, and somebody who had a little bit more time than me actually asked me to do it, and I was just blown away that they trusted me with this thing of money, and I was supposed to keep it for like a month and then go turn it in. And that was really hard for me my first year, to have that honesty and integrity and not spend, even though it was only $20, it was really hard for me. But I'm very grateful for that experience today and celebrating those little things that other people probably scoff at. That's a big damn deal to me, and I know it is to you guys too. A lot of other great miracles have happened, you know, as a result of the life I was living. I know today it's not as a result of something I did wrong, but as a result of the life I was living, my kids had to be in some unfortunate circumstances. And when I was barely sober, I had to face some pretty heavy things, you know, on behalf of my daughter. But had I not chosen to get sober at that time, I would have had no idea what was going to happen a month from that time and how bad she would have needed me. And I couldn't have been that person for her. And it's been really hard for me to trust that I can be that person for her even 5 years later. But just last October, I got to stand, you know, before a board of pardons, and I got to share a personal statement that I had written. And a judge in a prison told me that because of the life I was living, my daughter would be okay, and that most kids in that situation wouldn't be okay. And I knew, as crappy as I feel even today still about it, that that's God and this program working in my life. And before I had gotten here, nothing ever worked in my life. I couldn't do my laundry. I couldn't give my best friend or even my brother a hug. My brother came to see me get my chip on Tuesday. And it wasn't until after the meeting, but I realized for the first time, and this is 5 years later, I gave my brother a hug and there wasn't that weird awkwardness, you know. Every day when my kids come home, they put their backpacks down or whatever and they say, "Ah, it's so nice to be home." And every time they say that, I think about when I was a little kid and I could never say that, and how God makes that possible. Even though we don't live in the best circumstances that I would like to provide for them. It's not about where you live. It's not about the money you have or the things you have. This program has taught me that, you know, the riches in life come from the spiritual gifts that we get and the spiritual tools that we get by doing these steps and by staying involved in this fellowship. We get the opportunity to give that back to others. And, you know, this past year, I'm going to try to wrap things up because I just ramble on and on and on. I was joking about that earlier, but there's so many blessings that I've gotten, especially this past year. It's hard to stop talking about how great it is because I feel so humble and grateful, and I just want everybody that's sober to have that same hope. In the group of women that I am very involved with in sobriety, up until last October, there had never even been a women's meeting or a collective group of women for us to rely on, and we were able to form that and build this unity for women that, you know, I didn't have when I got here. And I've been able to sponsor other women. And my sponsor today is the same sponsor I had when I got here. And now I finally have the gift and honor to be able to do that with other women. And finally got, you know, my first gal through the 12 steps. And the bond that I have with her, and every step that we did together, the gifts that I gained and the perspective I gained, I feel like she's done way more for me than I could have ever done for her. And I just love the twist of this program, how, you know, we always give back, but we're always receiving. And that's what keeps me going today. And if you're new, I don't know if any of you are, but if you're new, you know, stick around and count your small blessings. Because for me in the beginning, they weren't small, even though they were in comparison. And that kept me going. And even today, I can look back on that and think of how big things are when we look at things in the spiritual form that this book gives us. So thank you for having me here tonight, and I'll take another 24.